Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Almeen. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds. You are exploring with us this week the topic of finding the courage to love. So many people have been burnt so many times that they are battle-weary. The biggest challenge before humanity is to learn to love without pain. This challenge becomes harder because of social conditioning that obscures the nature of true love. Learn to identify agendas that create expectations and how to eliminate them in favor of the innocence of living fully aware in the moment. My brothers and sisters, listeners that have joined us today, as you know by now, we have been alternating during the past 12 weeks between the relationship of self with relationship with others. We have one more such show left, which will be coming up next week, which speaks about the characteristics of a healthy relationship. Then we change to a whole different group and series that we will then present to you, and we will certainly be informing you about that. But when there is fear present with love, that is an unhealthy relationship. And I want to read for you, because these, every other week, has been one of poetry, of music, of a little bit of self-work. So grab a pen and some paper, because we are going to ask you at some point to identify the areas in your life where you are trying to control. Because where that is present, that means one is afraid to love. I want to read to you from The Prophet, a little book by Khalil Gibran, the Lebanese poet of long ago. And now he speaks of love. When love beckons you to follow him, though his ways are hard and steep, and when his wings enfold you, yield to him. Though the sword hidden amongst his pinions may wound you, and when he speaks to you, believe in him. Though his voice may shatter your dreams as the north wind lays waste the garden. For even as love crowns you, so shall he crucify you. Even as he is for your growth, so he is for your pruning. Even as he ascends to your height and caresses your tenderest branches that quiver in the sun, so shall he descend to your roots and shake them in their clinging to the earth. Like sheaves of corn, he gathers you unto himself. He threshes you to make you naked. He sifts you to free you from your husks. He grinds you to whiteness. He kneads you until you are pliant. And then he assigns you to his sacred fire, that you may become sacred bread for God's sacred feast. All these things shall love do unto you, that you may know the secrets of your heart, and in that knowledge become a fragment of life's heart. But if in your fear you would seek only love's peace and love's pleasure, then it is better for you that you cover your nakedness and pass out of love's threshing floor into the seasonless world, where you shall laugh, but not all of your laughter, and weep, but not all of your tears. Love gives naught but itself, and takes naught but from itself. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed, for love is sufficient unto love. When you love, you should not say, God is in my heart, but rather, I am in the heart of God. And think not you can direct the course of love, for love, if it finds you worthy, directs your course. Love has no other desire but to fulfill itself. But if you love and must needs have desires, let these be your desires: to melt and be like a running brook that sings its melody to the night, to know the pain of too much tenderness, to be wounded by your own understanding of love, and to bleed willingly and joyfully, to wake at dawn with a winged heart and give thanks for another day of loving, to rest at the noon hour and meditate life's ecstasy, to return home at eventide with gratitude, and then to sleep with a prayer for the beloved in your heart and a song of praise upon your lips. Beloved ones, love hurts when we have unmet expectations. What he has wanted to say throughout this, like a golden thread running through his words, is to love in the place where you are grateful to give. And your answer to life's challenge to love is, what is the most I can give? Instead of the one who wishes to control and for safety, born of fear, who asks, what is the most I can get for the least I can give? We spoke 2 weeks ago about self-love, the foundation of all relationship, and we spoke about how vital self-knowledge is, that self-knowledge is really all there is, because we are a being as vast as the cosmos. If we first have this vast relationship with ourselves, then we do not need, we simply desire. And love is the desire to include. We have in the past done it incorrectly. And on the show 2 weeks ago, we said that the greatest challenge to humanity is to learn to love without pain, as we have said again this day. Why is it then that somehow love to humanity has become so distorted? It is because of the damage to what we call grids. There are spider webs of lines of light relaying to all of us what it is like to be human, what it is like to be a male or a female. We have in the past had flaws in the actual relay system. Part of it has also been, and why this is the case, is described fully in the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms, and it goes beyond the scope of what we're addressing today. But the relay system itself resembled a spider web that had holes punched into it. And the template itself was also damaged. So on the 25th of August in 2005, the masculine grid that had been severely damaged by a loss of impeccability in beings higher up in the evolutionary scale was repaired by the Mother Goddess, the creatress of all life. And what she wanted to accomplish with this for males was the following: that they express their emotions in a positive way. So many men have repressed love and have repressed emotions because they haven't known how to do it in a positive way. This has been in part because anger. They have been afraid to express anger and to, in fact, hurt those that are around them. But anger has, in the past, made way for other things to come in its place. And it needed to be expressed in a way that was, in fact, not conflict-producing, but resolving conflict. In our eighth week, we discussed conflict resolution in relationships. For those of you that missed that, please take the time to listen to it. Secondly, males have been afraid to express fear. We've been programmed that it's not masculine to be afraid. That old program had to be discarded, that they somehow thought it made them less masculine to say, I'm afraid of this and this and this, and look those fears in the face. Then again, love for men is actually, and this is according to one of the goddesses that have spoken to me about this, deeper than for a female. Love has been for men so deep that they have been afraid of it, that they have been afraid to even express it to another. Then, aside from the expressing of emotions as a fearful thing to males, the other area in which the male grid had been damaged is that when they did feel emotion, because of the repression that it had had for so many eons of time in the masculine races and in males in general, the fulfilling of duty in the midst of emotion became very difficult. And so emotions were suppressed so that duty could be done. But they go hand in hand. There is a time for everything. And when we have done our work and we have done our duty, it is necessary to take the time to cry, to take the time to feel the feelings of deep emotions in our hearts. Then there was a third category in which the male grid had to be repaired. And that is that competitiveness, stepping upon others or being better than others, had taken a hold of the masculine psyche instead of simply being a motivation for growth. It became a way of relating. These things had to be repaired. And when they were repaired, and hopefully men and male races everywhere are starting to incorporate this into their life, the feminine grid could be repaired, for it too was damaged. Women were afraid to accept love because men tended to go overboard or out of balance in instances where very strong love was felt on occasion. With these grids repaired, beloved ones, loving is going to become a lot easier. Join us after this commercial break as we learn again how to find our passion and our joy. Thank you for joining us on Walking Between the Worlds.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Reiki, balancing form and essence, hosted by Reiki Master Phyllis Lee Forimoto, brings to the Seventh Wave Network this worldwide human art form. Join Phyllis every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time as she shares her experiences from around the globe and helps you to understand the effects of living in conscious relationship with the energy of Reiki. Reiki, balancing form and essence, every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Seventh Wave Network. You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We now welcome onto our show somebody that you may be familiar with by now. Such a dear friend and the husband of the Master Genie who was on our show 2 weeks ago. Bert, welcome. So glad that you could join us and can help me with finding out how we can once again reignite the passion of our lives.
It's nice to be here.
And please tell us a little bit about why, you know, people have felt that it is unsafe to be too passionate.
I think it's just a fear that's been ingrained in all of us since we've been growing up. It's just, and you need new guidance.
And when the social conditioning of our lives has left a clear impression that it is unsafe to fully participate in the game of life, we may hang back in the safety of the known, afraid to make ourselves a target by being noticed. We may fear that passion could cause our light to shine so brightly that others might try and tear us down so that our own lack of luster isn't as obvious. So that their own lack of luster isn't as obvious. And for our listeners, we've discussed the stages of social development. In the very most, shall we say, initial stages, we're dealing with tribal life. And tribe cannot stand anyone shining too brightly. Then everyone criticizes them, because if they do acknowledge that such brightness exists among them, then everything had to change, and change has been uncomfortable. So, Bert, what happens if we deny our desire to express passionately?
Well, if we deny that desire long enough, we'll end up being strangers to passion. We won't know how to find it, not even to recognize it when we do. The lateral hypothalamus tells us when we've eaten enough. The ventromedial hypothalamus tells us when we're hungry. In the same way, if we deny the promptings from these portions of the brains, we will end up either obese or anorexic. And when that happens, we have to gently coach ourselves into recognizing what the promptings are and what they feel like.
I remember actually in college studying a situation where damage was done to a rat's lateral hypothalamus, and it didn't stop eating. And actually overate. It's just horrific. You know, it's horrible what people do to animals, but because it was that horrible, I've never forgotten it, so I quite understand what you're saying. But please continue.
Well, when passion beckons, we feel warm, we feel excited, our faces are flushed, and our imagination is stirring with questions of what if and what lies beyond the next horizon. Inspired us into action, and it gives us a belief that we can take risks and we can build.
So in other words, we know we're passionate about something when it makes our eyes light up. It's something we want to pursue. We want to know where that specific door can take us.
Yeah, we find our passions by following yearnings of our moments, moments joy may invoke with our hearts. It's a lost song of the singer feels within the shadows of his mind. It's the lost rhythm that the dancer never seeks. It's the mysteries of the cosmos that wait for the scientist or the metaphysician to unlock. It's a desire inspired by innocence in our child's eyes to build a life of wonder and beauty for our own family.
Well, so what do we do if we've become a stranger to passion?
Well, we might have to become acquainted with one facet at a time. When expressed, passion consists of taking risks, of accomplishments, and building something new. It adds new experiences, further boundaries, and a new depth to our lives.
That is beautiful. Please continue.
While we train ourselves to hear the voice of passion once again, we'll find the yearning of our heart and follow where it leads. We'll make a concerted effort to break free from the prison bars of ruts and expectations, of socially conditioned limitations and self-imposed belief systems that keep us in mediocrity. We take a few minutes a day and dare to dream of what would make our hearts sing. We wake each morning to determine to live the day before us just as though it were our last. We look at our lives as though for the first time, with fresh perspective, we can detect the joyless, self-sacrificing areas. And with courage and great consideration for the consequences of our actions, we implement our first steps to bring the glow of passion back into these areas.
Oh, wow. You know, you've said so much just with that. If we take a look, like Native Americans have always said, this is a good day to die, as they rode into battle. I never could quite understand that, and then one day it clicked. It was that if they were allotted only one day on earth, how would they live it? They would live it as gloriously as they possibly can. So much of our relationships, the stagnation that we find in it, is because we take for granted the beauty, the majestic privilege of living life with another. We spoke before on the program. program on self-love, how that exploration of self never ever ends. The same applies to another. It never ends. And speaking about the joyless self-sacrificing areas, my beloved listeners, martyrdom is at an end. In August of 2006, it was announced by the Mother Goddess to all in the cosmos that growth now came through support, no longer through opposition. If there are areas where we are still acting out the martyrs, it could well be a matter that we don't feel lovable, and so instead we settle for feeling needed. Please continue, Bert.
Well, a decision may take a minute to make, but it could be life-altering. It needs to be supported by a firm foundation, and this requires planning and also a certain amount of analysis. What's our goal? What resources will we need? Is there disciplinary action between what we need and what we have, and how can we fill it? Many businesses fail dreams with them, not because enough thought was not given to what is needed to support them in terms of time and money.
So what you're saying is once a goal is identified, we have to sort of analyze what it's going to take to do it. So if we want to bring passion back into our life, we've got to then figure how are we going to do it. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Jack London, one of the highest paid authors, if one takes inflation into consideration, and he used the same method for achieving success.
And, Master Bert, could I ask you to come back? We have music that is just getting ready to be played. What I would very much like our listeners to do, because this is a good point for them to work on, is to identify the areas in their life that doesn't make their hearts sing. And if it doesn't, what will it take to bring back the passion? We're going to play you now some music. Please take a look at those areas. Make changes where you are in ruts. As we have heard, ruts close down energy that supplies life, either to ourselves or our relationships.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our show, Walking Between the Worlds, and our discovery of how we can find the courage to love again and to put the passion back into our life. And we have the Master Bert on the show to help me with this, and he has explained that when our goal is to achieve our passion, any goal, whether it's the achievement of passion or joy or whatever, takes some analysis. It takes steady work towards it. We need to put a foundation of planning underneath it. We need to identify the areas where it has to happen. And he was saying to us right before we took a little break that Jack London, which was the author, Call of the Wild and so on, I'm sure you're familiar with him, that he used the same method for achieving success. Tell us a little bit about Jack London, please.
Well, he liked to break everything down into projects and into tasks. And he learned that because as an immigrant dock worker, he had a dream of breaking free from the heart-grueling labor and becoming an author. So each day, before his long day began, he studied English grammar for an hour. Then he worked to earn his bread and butter as a dock worker, and at night, he took a creative writing class at the library. Then when he got home, he did his creative writing. His goal was broken up into projects, then into tasks, and his day was structured to accommodate them.
You know, many envy somebody that achieves, like Jack London. But my goodness, anyone that's prepared to put that much into their goals deserves success. And you know, sometimes it takes burning the candle on both ends to fulfill a dream. It is our passion that keeps our enthusiasm lit and gives us our second wind to fly higher than we ever thought possible. Now, he mentioned something earlier that was interesting. He said that that which produces joy will guide us where our passion is. You know why that is, listeners? Joy and passion are two ends of one stick. They are, in fact, paired as an emotion. The deeper your passion, the more the joy you find. The deeper the joy you go into, the deeper your passion can grow. So, let's take a look at how they relate. Can you speak to us a little bit about joy, please?
Well, as passion explores the multitude of possibilities through which we can express, so joy is concentrating on the simplicity of the moment. It's a mindset, a certain focus that sees perfection here and now, casting golden glow over our experiences of yesterday's, and it turns the mundane into poetry, and it captures the moment in a still life image.
You know, passion reminds me of going down the whitewater rapids in a raft with blood flushing your cheeks, and this joy that you've just described so exquisitely, actually, reminds me of a walk in a snowy forest where everything is totally silent, and you're the first one to make tracks in the deep snow. Milton said, "The mind in its own place and of itself can turn hell into heaven and heaven into hell." And the great English painter Turner, at the end of his life, said that in his entire life, he'd never seen anything ugly. Franz Liszt was urged to write his memoirs, but he said, "It's enough to have lived such a life." He found such joy in his experiences, he didn't have to externalize them to appreciate them. Tell us how to recognize joy.
It can be recognized by the deep feeling of satisfaction it brings. It's the feeling that one has come home to oneself. It taps into a quiet place that within minutes the soul and that nurtures the soul and replenishes the mind. When under its spell, joy makes us feel light and young again, connected to the earth and freed from our cares.
Please continue. It's just beautiful.
The key to finding our joy lies in our ability to work with time. In a world where mounting responsibilities urge us to accomplish more in less time, most tasks are hastily performed. Yet we don't seem to have any more time to enjoy life.
No, we don't. In fact, I sometimes wonder, the people honking behind me at the traffic light, because I didn't see it turn green, what are they going to do with the extra 10 seconds that they saved? Sit in front of the television?
Well, the time that's supposed to be leisure time has even more undone chores competing for it. The reason this lies is so that we rush, we speed up time, and we seem to have even less of it at our disposal.
Wow, that is so important. I want to repeat that. You're saying that when we rush, time actually speeds up. And time is very malleable in our hands. It really, really isn't something as static as we know. And so we seem to have even less at our disposal.
Just as building with passion requires careful and disciplined time allocations, living with joy requires that ability to compress time. If we focus on the details in front of us at this very moment, time slows down. Even if we cannot find an hour today to do the things we enjoy, we can find the time to enjoy the things we're doing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You cut up vegetables and make a stew, you can see the colors, the carrots, the different textures, the smell, the fresh fragrance as we cut through their skin.
And you know, I want to explain to our listeners this issue of compressing time. The best example I can give them, because a master always lives in the moment, which is a form of compressed time. When car accidents occur, people always describe how everything seemed to be in slow motion. When somebody lives with the emptied mind, the reason I call people like Bert a master is because he has managed to silence the thoughts in his head. His mind is empty. When one does that, well, I heard a giggle there, but it's supposed to be empty. At least there is an option. But when the mind is emptied out of that internal dialogue, we live in the moment. And we can accomplish 10 times more than other people. In fact, for them, our lives might seem chaotic, but for us, we're simply living in compressed time. So what about repetitive work, for example?
Well, it can become a mantra or a production line prayer as we send blessings and angelic assistance to the homes where our products will end up. Walking around in a crowded street, we can feel the sadness of others, but can turn it into joy by envisioning blessings pouring into their lives. The loss of the lives of others can be used to inspire praise and gratitude for the blessings in our own.
And in our choice of the joy to fill our leisure time, just like before, we look for that which will inspire us into achievement. As the joy flows inward on the surface, the passion it inspires folds outward beneath the surface. It's a little bit like your child's slinky. You know, that coil that's, if you hook it end to end, you get what's called a tube torus. When you're folding it in upon itself, a donut rolling upon itself, when the top folds out, the bottom folds in. The greater our joy, the greater the actions it will inspire. Now, let's take a look at why traditionally it's been feeling very unsafe to let our light shine like that.
Demonstrate too great a passion or too deep a joy. It's brought about persecution from the tribe, the rest of the tribe, whose lack of luster becomes apparent by comparison. And the tribes exist everywhere people see safety and uniformity. And these groups reject anything that can't be controlled.
In other words, it could be something like a church group, can't it?
Absolutely. When confronted with anything superlative that lies beyond the status quo, the tribe has the uncomfortable choice of either living with the excellence in their midst and feeling less by comparison, changing their own behavior to match the new standard, or alternatively, eject the tribe and the ones who excel.
And, you know, throughout the history, those who have demonstrated great passion or joy have so often been ostracized and shunned. I mean, people like Galileo, Joan of Arc, I mean, all of these people, isn't it?
Yes. But still, our inner song to conform to mediocrity is a psychological suicide.
Yep.
Bars through space and time to be the wayshowers of this planet, to allow ourselves to blend into the grayness and the unaware masses.
You're right. And, you know, we spoke last week about, it was actually 2 weeks ago, we spoke about how important it is that people study the subpersonalities. People are sort of aware of the inner child, but the inner nurturer, the inner child, the inner warrior, the inner sage, those things must be lived and they must be balanced. In fact, in the book Journey to the Heart of God, Mystical Keys to Immortal Mastery, I said in there that I believe that the knowledge of these subpersonalities, the interaction of our own inner family, is in fact the destiny of man. I highly recommend that our listeners take a little look at that and that they start to live it. It brings immediate joy from the dynamic balance that ensues from it. So, surrounded by our own inner family, driven by passion and sustained by joy, let us with courage walk the path of a life well lived. Let us fulfill our destinies as light beacons unto the world. Now, what are the gifts of the cycles of life, these cycles that pulse outward like passion and then pull inward like joy? You know, we're looking at the courage to love. The courage to love, it becomes much safer when we also come inward to have that relationship with ourselves. If we only live in expansion, having relationships with others, that is when we can be devastated by loss. But we will speak about that later. Join us after this commercial break.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We've spoken about the cycles of life, living outward in relationship with others, but taking the exact same time to come inward in relationship to ourselves. The nature of the cycles of expansion is to build. You build a relationship with others. The nature of the cycles of contraction, on the other hand, is to destructure. If you take time to see where your heart sings, you know the portions of your outer relationships that don't work. When the cycles are out of balance, the gifts of these cycles of life aren't delivered, and their nature become distorted. For instance, destructuring can become destructiveness. Passion can become aggression. So talk to us a little bit about the cycles when they are in balance.
Well, if they're in balance, if we're unaware of the gifts inherent in their nature, we can't fully reap their benefits. The ones we call saints.
And can I jump in here?
Sure.
You know why they're called saints, beloved ones? S was the ancient language for snake, un for heaven. And the one who cooperated with the snakes of heaven, which is the spirals of awareness, were called sun or sant. And in other words, they cooperated with life. They did not try and control it. That is what made someone a saint. Sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
No, thank you. The ones that we call the saints have always been those who have first gained the hidden insights of the cosmic forces and their rhythms. And then they learn to reap their benefits by cooperating with them.
So to reap the gifts of building assets and insights and infrastructure, expansion, experience, or a lifestyle that we want during expansion, we need diversity. In other words, you spoke about how the expansion is the complexity, and the coming home to the self is a more of a simplistic, it's when things simplify. So explain to us about the cycle of expansion.
Like a tube torus or a large donut folding outwards during the expansion period, the bottom, unseen, is folding inward. This means that even the expression of passion as a dominant emotion, the emotion of joy, lingers out of sight as a guiding force. And when we knock on the doors before us and they reveal a possible future, the next question is, what will make my heart sing? In this way, our inner joy helps us guide us in our choices.
And you know what? It also takes a certain amount of risk-taking, doesn't it?
Yeah, we must be willing to act and take those risks when we're guided to. To think we can either control or predict the future closes the doors of possibility, and sometimes we have to be courageous in trying something, but with great awareness as to the consequences of our actions. And when we act, we must always benefit from indwelling life.
And, you know, I said on one of the previous shows, there's really only one choice in the cosmos. what benefits indwelling life and what doesn't, what is life-enhancing and what is not. The faulty relationship is lived from a place of need. The full relationship is lived from a place of self-love, fullness, and that benefits indwelling life. Please continue.
If the cycle of expansion with its diversification can be equated to throwing mud on a wall to see how much will stick, the contraction cycle's gift of destructuring will clean up the mud that didn't stick. It's during the contraction cycle when joy is dominant, and the joyless pieces of our life are seen for what they are, and they're discarded. Saying no to irrelevant pieces in our lives allows room for a bigger yes possibility, even greater than before.
You know, there's an example that I've often thought of that can be seen in the rise and decline of the British Empire. Its expansion included incorporating many diverse cultures into a sprawling umbrella empire, but if it had clung tenaciously to those territories, it would eventually have been conquered. It was spread too thin. Its many families who were displaced around the world were eager to return to their roots. Instead of waiting for forced change, Britain relinquished many territories, but kept those that contributed and were manageable and wished to remain part of the Commonwealth. And when war came to its island shores, it had the benefit of an expanded infrastructure, a strong foundation of industry, many allies, and a wealth of experience from its period of expansion-related conflicts. In addition, its soldiers weren't battle-weary from fighting too many wars. When we fight too many wars, beloved ones, when we are out there trying to impress without coming home to self, we are like an empire that is spread too thin. But tell us about the periods of alternating activity and contemplation. Are they mirrored anywhere else in the cosmos?
Well,
because we
absolutely
always have that.
Yes, they're mirrored in nature by the cycles. We have day and night, and we have summer and winter. A tiger pauses before he pounces, feels life fallow before they sprout. Life goes from complexity and diversity to simplicity and back again. It's a never-ending, expanding cycle. So if we bring our lives into harmony with these rhythms more efficient than the cosmos, we must prosper in every conceivable way.
And, I want to share with the listeners, so many light workers do not feel at home on Earth. When you don't feel at home on Earth, it makes you vulnerable. Because, you see, that is when you look to another to provide you that feeling of being at home. And these cycles of expansion, contraction, the way we pulse between joy and passion, between fun and achievement, that is living within the pulse of the cosmos. And that is the time that we truly feel at home. Living within expansion, if we live only in expansion, we have wings, but we don't have roots. We are the fire carriers who reach for the new and find ruts and routines soul-deadening. But their love is usually poured into what they're doing. But the bottom line of it is they're not very good at coming home to self. They live on the edge. It's an electrical, masculine energy. And in relationship, this kind of overbalance, it's a significant factor in the partners we choose, because we usually choose partners then that are also overbalanced. And the overbalanced partners are overbalanced into roots. And when this happens, if anyone grows, that's not a very safe place to have a relationship from. The safety is not in mediocrity, in lack of shining, in lack of expressing passion or joy. Safety is imbalance, because change in the form of pain, which is forced change, come to those who refuse to grow, who refuse to be in balance. Now, the solution is that if somebody is in overachievement, but is not very good at that self-nurturing, the higher the flight of an individual's thought, the greater the need for roots. The inner child and the inner nurturer we spoke about in expression provide a source of magnetic energy to help create that wholeness within. They have to come home to themselves. And those of us that work and live in contraction, meaning we're very much home for ourselves, but we doubt our ability to achieve. What was mentioned earlier about breaking up goals into tasks, into little portions that we can manage to find ourselves good at achieving, is the answer to bring the balance into our life that makes it finally a safe place to love. Next week, we will speak about characteristics of a healthy relationship, and we will close our 13-week segment on relationship with self, the divine, and others. Join us then for Walking Between the Worlds. And my love to you always, listeners. Thank you for your support.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.